For those of you who are baseball fans, this week was a sad week. For the first time in 90 years, the baseball season was cut short and the World Series was canceled, something that World War I and World War II and the Korean War and the Depression had not managed to do, had happened. And what's it all about? Well, part of it's about money. But another part of it's about credibility. Quite frankly, the baseball players don't believe the owners. And the owners don't believe that the baseball players have any basic interest in the long-run future of the game. One headline in the paper this morning in the LA Times said, Rwanda, low on cash and credibility. And the reason it's low on cash is because it's low on credibility. Can you trust the government to do what it says it's going to do after all the massacre that's taken place? Who wants to give money to people that you can't trust? We watch and a little nation and a large nation play a game of kind of Russian roulette. Does the President of the United States really mean what he says? And in Haiti today, there's people whose lives are quite literally on the line because the question is he credible? Is he really going to do what he's announced he's going to do? Back in October of 1992, a jury, or at least a civil case, came to the courts in Texas. It was a lawsuit against a televangelist. And they tried to impanel a jury of objective people who would be able to consider the case. After a long period of trying, they gave up. They failed. They couldn't find enough people who could be objective over whether a televangelist could be believed or not. They kept hearing the same statement over and over. It's a giant ripoff. They're all thieves. They're just in it for themselves. Young woman sits in my office and through tears says, I am never going to believe a man again in my life. My father walked out on me when I was a child. My uncle abused me. One of my teachers is coming on to me. And this man who'd made all these promises, and look what he's just done. Can't believe men. Seems like a national epidemic at times. Almost everywhere you look. You look to the world of research science and you have research scientists changing statistics on breast cancer so their material can come out a little bit better or how they want it to be. Great university like Stanford has to admit that they've been lying to the government and taking money that isn't theirs. Politicians get elected and we expect them to break their promises rather than keep their promises. That's part of the game. CEOs say we've got to cut back, and they cut workers' salary and then award themselves obscene bonuses. Multi-million dollar figures. It goes on and on and on in almost every area of life. One individual has written, duplicity and deception in public and private life are very substantially greater than they've been in the past. We used to talk about the credibility gap. Maybe now we need to talk about the credibility Grand Canyon. Can anybody be believed? Does anybody keep their promises? One of the great words for our time is credibility. It's a simple word, but it's a powerful one. Credibility is the capacity to inspire trust and confidence. It's the ability to be an island of certainty and an ocean of uncertainty. And it affects every area of my life. We need parents who are credible, who can be believed, who their young men and young women can look up and say, you know, there's a lot of things I can't believe, but I know that my mom and my dad are credible. We need partners who make a vow and are credible till death do us part. We need leaders in our government. We need leaders in our businesses who are credible. They make their promises and they keep their promises. They are competent and they have character. I can trust them. Many of you are in small business and you know that we need workers who are credible. People I can rely on. I mean, they'll be there when they say they're going to be there and they'll handle the funds in a credible way and they won't take out of the lower till. I can believe them. We need church leaders who are credible. People who live their faith and keep their word. A few things are more important than the issue of credibility. Being an island of certainty in an ocean of uncertainty. This morning I want to think with you about the life of a man whose life oozed credibility. It oozed it because he came under incredible pressure. Just because your life has credibility doesn't mean people automatically grant it to you. And his credibility was under attack. But you can throw mud at credibility, but you can't disguise it. It comes through. And maybe in the experience of the Apostle Paul in 1 Thessalonians chapter 2, there's something for us to grab hold of and learn some basic issues about our lives. Most of us aren't where Paul is. We're not dealing with the same issues, but our life is either credible or lacks credibility. And whether or not my marriage is going to be what it ought to be, or my family is going to be what it ought to be, or this church, or my business, or my work life, or my friendships, credibility is the big word. So turn with me, if you would, to 1 Thessalonians chapter 2. And we want to look at the first 6 verses. For those of you who are joining us this morning, and this may not be your regular church home, we're delighted to have you, and we hope that you make a practice to feel comfortable and free to come back to Trinity Church. And I hope also you take the opportunity to drive along Interstate and look over and see the new building that's being built. I hope you're excited as you see the roof going on, and this week the roof will be on, and a good deal of the stuccoing, and if everything goes well on Wednesday, they'll begin drywalling inside, and this is an exciting couple of weeks that are around the corner in terms of all kinds of things beginning to happen very quickly and as the landscaping takes place. But we're studying on Sunday mornings the book of 1 Thessalonians, a book written to a church that was just a baby church. It was a matter of months old. And Paul is writing, he can't go back there because of the riots that occurred related to his first visit. And he's really concerned about helping these people get stability in a world that seems very uncertain. And so in verse 1 of chapter 2, he's beginning to respond to some attacks that have been leveled against him. And the first 12 verses of chapter 2 are all about those attacks. We're going to look at the first 6 this morning. You know, brothers, he says, that our visit to you was not a failure. Literally, it wasn't empty. We had previously suffered and been insulted in Philippi, as you know, but with the help of our God, we dared, we had the boldness, we had the freedom to tell you His gospel in spite or in the midst of strong opposition. For the appeal we make doesn't spring from error or impure motives, nor are we trying to trick you. On the contrary, we speak as men approved by God to be entrusted with the gospel. We're not trying to please men, but God who tests our hearts. You know, we never use flattery, nor did we put on a mask to cover up greed. God is our witness. We were not looking for praise, for glory, for applause from men. Not from you or anyone else. Simple words are sometimes hard to define. Words like credibility and words like integrity. There's a story told of a group of researchers who are trying to define the word integrity, and they worked with it for a while. Then they called in some people. They called in a philosopher and asked him what his definition of integrity was. And he pondered for a bit and then said, integrity is what you do when nobody will know. They dismissed him, and a businessman came in and asked him what integrity meant for him. And he said, well, in my world, integrity means that a person's word is as good as their bond. They appreciated that, wrote it down, and asked a politician to come in. Politician came into the room, and they looked at him and said, what's integrity? Man went a little pale, and he went over to the door and opened the door and looked to see if there was anyone else out there. And then he went over to the window and shut the window, and he looked at the men and said, men, tell me, what do you want it to be? Integrity is a word like credibility in that way. What are we really talking about? Let me think with you about what I think is the overall sense of this passage. Paul wants us to, I think, understand something foundational about credibility. He is under attack. He'd come to Greece, as we know it, under the direction of God, gone to Philippi, and in Philippi had begun to preach the gospel, and all kinds of opposition had surfaced. He had been publicly arrested, publicly humiliated, publicly beaten, thrown into jail. God had intervened in a remarkable way, and he'd been forced to get out of Philippi, leaving behind a little infant church, and come to Thessalonica. And he'd come to Thessalonica, and he'd begun to preach, and then all of a sudden, quite literally, all hell had broken loose. And intense opposition from the synagogue leaders and from some of the people who they got to work alongside of them had caused a riot. And in the middle of the night, Paul had been forced to get out of town for the safety of the church, that little group of Christians. He'd gone down to Berea, and another riot had broken out in Berea. And he'd been forced to leave Berea. Philippi, Thessalonica, Berea. And now he had gone to Athens, and he's writing them from Corinth. And as he writes them from Corinth, he's very much aware that although he's gone and the immediate cause of the difficulty, he was the lightning rod for all of this, now what people are doing, and word has come to him from Timothy, who's just returned from visiting there, that there's a vicious smear campaign going on. All kinds of things are being said about Paul. He's being pictured as an opportunist who walked into town, got people at a vulnerable low point, and then scurried out of town to save his own neck. And they said his motives are impure, his methods are manipulative, his conduct is questionable, and all kinds of things were being said about Paul, and he's addressing them. In the background of verses 1 to 6, you can hear the whispered smear campaign, and some of it not very whispered. But underneath it is this fundamental issue. The intention is to destroy Paul's credibility. And if they can destroy Paul's credibility, they will end his influence. Because if he can't be believed, if the attacks are true, Paul's influence is gone. Now, I say all of this to point out a principle. It's a very obvious principle, and yet it's an absolutely crucial one. Credibility is the foundation of influence. Credibility is the foundation of influence. If you cannot believe someone, you will not allow them to influence you. We follow people who we trust. Trust is made up of the components of competence. We believe in their abilities and character. We believe in who they are. Now, the major issue here isn't Paul's competence, it's his character. And the point is, we don't think you can trust this man. That's especially true in the modern world. If it was true in the ancient world that credibility is the key to influence, think about it in our modern world, because in our modern world, there is no connection between position and credibility. Just because someone has a particular position, we don't necessarily believe you can trust them. Whether it's the President of the United States or the President of a company, as a matter of fact, we often say, well, obviously he'd lie to protect himself because he's in that position. In their book, which is a business book, James Kouzes and Barry Posner talk about credibility. That's the title of the book, and it's addressed to the whole issue of leadership in modern business. Let me quote something in an extended way because it puts it rather well. So just think about a time when you might need to borrow money, when you might have to become indebted. Imagine that you're trying to get a mortgage to build the house of your dreams. You sit down across the desk from a loan officer at your local financial services company. After you've completed all the paperwork, the first thing the loan officer is likely to do is to check your credit. Credit and credibility share the same root origin, credo, meaning I trust or I believe. A loan officer checking your credit is literally checking on your store of believability, searching to know whether you can make good on your word. The officer wants to know whether to believe you when you say you will pay back the loan on time and with interest. When it comes to leaders, in many respects, constituents act like loan officers. When a leader makes promises, like signing a promissory note about what he will do to guide the organization on a journey to an uplifting new future, people instinctively do a credit check. They ask themselves, the last time this person made such a promise, was he being honest about it? Did she tell the truth, or was that just some campaign pledge to get our support? People also ask themselves, does he have the enthusiasm to keep people excited along the difficult road to the future? Does she inspire others to make the sacrifices necessary to make it to the end? And they wonder, does she have the competence to get us from where we are now to where we'd like to be? Does he have a track record of accomplishment that would give us confidence in his abilities? the answers to these essential questions are yes, then people are likely to willingly give their time, talent, and toil. If the answers are no, people are not likely to volunteer. Now, I'm not sure that it's as important as we think about leadership, although that's crucial. But one of the things we need to realize is that credibility is the equity of influence. For some of us who are parents, and as our children come into their teenage years, one of the most crucial issues that we face is, do I have any credibility? Because if kids walk away from your moral structure and your spiritual beliefs, almost inevitably the issue will be that they check the credit balance of your credibility. And all too often they found that you're in a deficit position. What about my partner? What about my marriage? Are they willing to extend me credit? Are they willing to extend me trust? Well, the question is, what's my track record of believability? What's my credibility rating? Think about it as a church. One of the things that I recognize about this congregation of believers as I came to it is that this is a congregation that had a high degree of belief in its leadership. And that spoke to the credibility of men like Larry Poland and Rick Langer, who led this congregation, and the elders who led it over the period of time. And one of the things that I recognize is there's been men under God who had a track record of believability, who built up a great deal of equity. And this church runs on the basis that there are leaders who can be trusted. And to squander that would be to give away a priceless treasure. And that issue is one that every parent and every marriage partner and everybody involved in a significant friendship needs to think about. Credibility is the key to relationships because it's the foundation of influence. How credible am I? Let me think with you about three things that I think are part of the process of credibility. They're very simple. There's nothing very significant about them, but simply goes like this. When credibility is high, influence is powerful. I remember a time in my life where I was really undergoing some pressure, and I can remember looking in the mirror and saying, boy, if I come out of this with my integrity intact, and I didn't use the term as I thought about it, my credibility with my kids, I may come away with nothing else, but I don't want to lose my credibility. I want those who are closest to me to know I acted with integrity. Because nothing is worse than to leave your children a legacy that they couldn't trust. A person who should have modeled credibility. But when credibility is high, influence is powerful. If I trust you, I'll walk a long way in the direction that we should be going. Second part of the process is that when credibility is questioned, influence is undermined. That's why Paul's concerned about this. His credibility was coming under attack, and there were plausible statements that were being made against his credibility. Now, you need to understand, Paul is not concerned about defending himself. It was simply an issue of whether Paul was credible. He wouldn't be concerned about it. It was, if they undermined his credibility, they would undermine his influence, and his influence was the gospel. So he's only defending himself because he wants people to believe the message he came with. And Satan believes if he can cut Paul's credibility off at the knees, he'll cut their attention to the gospel. And that's true in our life. I mean, if we come bringing the truth of Jesus Christ to another person and somebody looks at my life and says, that doesn't square up with reality. My influence over that person is directly proportional to my credibility with that person. Am I a truth speaker? Third thing that is obvious is if credibility is high, influence is powerful. When credibility is questioned, influence is undermined. Thirdly, when credibility is squandered, cynicism is unleashed. We live in a cynical society. And one of the reasons we live in a cynical society is because credibility has been squandered. That's one of the central issues of our time. Because children have watched as parents walked away from commitments, and the epidemic of divorce has caused a catastrophe in terms of credibility. Kuzis and Posner say, credibility is one of the hardest attributes to earn, and it is the most fragile of human qualities. It is earned minute by minute, hour by hour, month by month, year by year. But it can be lost in very short order if not attended to. We're willing to forgive a few minor transgressions, a slip of the tongue, a misspoken word, a careless act, but there comes a time when enough is enough. And when people have used up all their credibility, they will find it is nearly impossible to earn it back. See, when credibility is squandered, it kills morale. It slaughters hope. People live in a kind of despair. When credibility's gone, you have to build coercion. Or you breed rebellion. So let's walk through this attack on Paul. And what I want you to notice with me in a kind of paired relationship is that he'll have a statement, and really the statement reflects the attack. And the attack really is a credibility killer. And then I want you to notice the response to it, which is a credibility builder. And there are three paired statements. The first is in verses 1 and 2. You know, brothers, that our visit to you was not a failure. It wasn't empty. Now, behind that is probably the statement that these people came along and said, hey, Paul's visit was empty. What that meant was they were saying it was empty of content. I mean, this man came in and he didn't have anything really to say, and it was empty of substance. It was a failure in the sense that, you know what he was? He was a traveling religious preacher just like all of these others. He came into town, he caught you at a moment, and he manipulated and he moved you and he played upon your emotions. And then the first sign of trouble, he left town. He won't come to anything. And you people were suckered in by a traveling evangelist. And there's no content to it. All you were, he's an opportunist. He was looking for how he could get the most out of you. I'll never forget a statement Alistair Cook makes in a book about six men, six significant figures of the 20th century, about the Duke of Windsor. You know, the man who was king of England and then resigned so he could marry a divorced woman, or abdicated. And Alistair Cook has a long description of him, and at the end he makes this statement. He said, what was true of the Duke of Windsor was a statement that all good men should hope will never be said about them. He was at his best only when the going was good. I thought a lot about that. He was at his best only when the going was good. He's an opportunist. I mean, he rode the wave of opportunity. And Paul comes back and says, I mean, opportunists, people are their best only when the going's good. That kills credibility. The issue is, what about when the going gets tough? What about when there's difficulties? And Paul says, I want to remind you, we'd previously suffered and been insulted in Philippi. Insulted hardly does justice to it. Here's a Roman citizen who's stripped, publicly flogged and imprisoned, every one a violation of his rights as a Roman citizen. Every one of which could have landed those people in jail for life. You did not treat a Roman like that. He wasn't simply insulted. He was publicly humiliated. But rather than defending his rights, he came to Thessalonica. And he was not riding the wave of opportunity. He was riding, or he was underneath, as it were, a kind of Niagara Falls of opposition and difficulty, and he comes into Thessalonica, and again, everything breaks loose. Notice the statement. We had previously suffered and been insulted in Philippi, as you know, but with the help of our God, we dared. We were bold. We had the courage. That's the sense of the word. To tell you his gospel in spite of strong opposition. Now, the two issues that he says were true of our response was consistency. We went to Philippi and there was trouble and we preached the gospel. We went to Thessalonica and there was trouble and we preached the gospel. We went to Berea and there was trouble and we preached the gospel. We went to Athens and there was mockery and we preached the gospel. We came to Corinth and we preached the gospel. Whatever the circumstances, we were consistent. We did what God had called us to do. And whatever the consequences, we were courageous. That's the two things he wants them to see. We were consistent and we were courageous. We were bold in our God. We put it in the line when our own safety was on the line, when our own security was on the line. We were not fair-weather evangelists. We were committed to do the will of God with consistency and courage, whatever the circumstances, whatever the consequences. And it didn't come because we were bold. It didn't come when we were courageous. If Paul was honest, he said, you know, when I came to you in Thessalonica, I came with fear and trembling. I was scared silly. Paul was not a naturally courageous man. What he was a spiritually dependent man. That's why he says, we dared to tell you, with the help of our God, we dared to tell you His gospel. Paul's courage came from his recognition that he was living out his life in the presence of God, and it was in dependence upon God that his courage came. Credible people are people who have the courage of their convictions. Whatever the cost, whatever the consequences. Credible people are people who have staying power, who live it out when the going is tough. I'll never forget my father. Most shaping experience of my life as a high school student, when my father was offered a job as vice president of a multinational pharmaceutical company in Canada in a particular part of the country, and I remember him saying, it's the job I've always wanted, but right now, spiritually for my family, it's not right to move them there. Because it meant moving to a part, and he was not convinced about the spiritual backup system that was there. And he said no to that job. And it cost my dad opportunity in that company. It cost my dad a good deal of money. But you know what? It got his dad a son. Because when I saw my dad put that on the line, whatever the circumstances and whatever the cost, I knew he had the real thing. And in the long run, my dad would rather have had three boys walking in godliness than a nice title and a bigger home. And God gave him that. So I learned. I saw my father live out the courage of his convictions. And that said, here's a credible man. Your kids need to see you doing that. They need to see, I'm not for sale. I'm here. Most of all for us as men, in a time in which men have all too often walked out, God says, men have the courage of your conviction. But it's no less true of women. Credible people have the courage of their convictions. Second thing about credible people is found in verses 3 and 4. Credible people, to use a term that Paul would never use, are congruent in character. Congruence is an interesting word. I looked it up in three dictionaries and still didn't understand what the dictionary definition was. They used some fancy mathematical expression that I didn't understand at all. But the basic idea is it just something is congruent is that there's a coinciding. Appearance is congruent with reality. Words are congruent with actions. The two coincide. They harmonize. They're playing the same song. Now, if you notice verse 3, underneath it all, and there's three different things, the attack is incongruence, insincerity, hypocrisy. The appeal we make doesn't spring from error. Now they're saying, hey, Paul, your message doesn't square with the facts. Everybody is entitled to be wrong in their opinions. No one's entitled to be wrong with the facts. What he's saying is from error. Second thing they were saying was, appeal we make doesn't spring from impure motives. He came into town, this wandering Jewish religious preacher, and he fed you this line. His motives were, he looked good, but what about the reality of his life? I mean, his motives were, and they could have said a number of different things. He's just building his own kingdom. He's just in it to get money. He's just in it for this reason. What are our motives behind our actions? And we live in a society that has insincerity detectors. I mean, we've got, whatever else, we've got high radar detectors for insincerity, for phoniness. They did in that world too. Third thing that they accuse him of is deceptive methods. appeal we make doesn't spring from error or impure motives, nor are we trying to trick you. The word that was used was the word that was used of baiting a net for fish or baiting a trap for birds or some other animal. And the attack was apparently that he was using deceptive methods. He was using switch and bait or whatever kind of technique, and he got them suckered into a system. The attack is this, that your message doesn't square with the facts, or the reality doesn't square with what your motives are, or your methods don't square with what you're really after. What he claimed to be and what he was were two different things. Paul comes back and he says, you need to understand the watchword of my life is authenticity. The watchword of my life is transparency. My message is true. My motives are pure. My methods are right. That's what he says in verse 3. But where do those things come from? It's found in verse 4. It comes from the fact that I don't live my life primarily on a horizontal level about how I'm going to appear to men. The secret of congruence of character is living a God-centered rather than a man-centered life. It says, I look back on my past, and you need to understand, I am a person who's been approved by God to be entrusted with the gospel. And that looks back to the past, and he says, God's put me under a scrutiny. I haven't come through a human kind of experience of being approved by people. I've been approved by God to be entrusted by the gospel. And what I hold in my hands is a sacred trust. And I hold it that way as somebody who's received, as it were, an ordination by God Himself. I've been called by God, and I'm accountable to God, and I'm a steward of God, and I live with the recognition that it's required of a steward that he be found faithful. But it's not just that. It's not just that I look to the past and I recognize I'm called by God. It's that I live my life, notice at the end of verse 4, we're not trying to please men, but God, who tests. Notice the present test. God who tests our hearts. It's not just that I've been approved by God in the past tense. It's that I live before God who keeps examining and scrutinizing my heart. My heart is an open book in the presence of God. Story told of one of the Huxley brothers who was asked to go and give a lecture somewhere. And he gave the lecture and he was writing on the board and writing things on the board. And one of the people front row said, Professor Huxley, could you stand aside? I can't read the board through you. And Huxley looked back at him and said, boy, I knew when I gave this talk that I'd have to be clear, but I didn't know I'd have to be transparent. But if we're going to have credibility, it's not enough to be clear. We've got to be transparent. We've got to be authentic. And what Paul wants us to understand is that transparency before God is the key to authenticity before people. He'll say it later on in 1 Corinthians. He'll say, you know, it doesn't matter to me whether you approve me or you don't approve me. I live my life before God, and one day I'm going to stand before Him and everything about me is going to be exposed. And congruence of character comes when I recognize that the ultimate issue is not my reputation, it's my character. It's not what people think about me, it's what God knows about me. And one of the great concerns of our life is that all too often we are concerned when a choice faces us. We kind of go the register up. Do I want to do this or not want to do this? Is it legal or not legal? Would my friends and my family approve or would they not approve? What would God have to say about this? And as you climb that ladder, the sad fact is that in many cases in our life, we never get to number 4. We say, do I want to do it or don't I want to do it? Is it legal or isn't it legal? Or what would other people say? But it's only as we cultivate a sense that who I am before God is the most significant thing about me. There's a congruence that's built into my life. Credible people have the courage of their convictions. Credible people have a congruence of character. They've got an honesty about their sin. They've got an astonishment of God's grace. And they've got a commitment to holiness to live out their life so that God is well pleased. Third thing is in verses 5 and 6. Credible people are people who have the courage of their convictions. Credible people are congruent in character. Credible people are committed to servanthood. I think you can read the credibility killer in verse 5. They were accusing Paul of flattery. You know that they never use flattery. You know, flattery, the people with butter under their tongues, honey under their lips, who say all the nice things, but you know as they're saying it, they're using words so they can use you. They're making you feel good so they can get you to help them. Now he says, we didn't use flattery. We didn't come and say all these nice things about you. Then he says, and they were accusing of a mask to cover up greed. God is our witness. We'll look at that more next week, but they were accusing of being in it for the money, being in it to rip them off, running a spiritual scam. It's been said long before the first century. That's what it's all about. Bottom line is money. Ask most people what makes them lose credibility as far as the church is concerned. They're always asking for money. Always asking for money. That's why we want people to understand when we take the offering at Trinity Church, if you're a guest, if you're a visitor, that part of the service is not for you. That's for the family. That's for those for whom this is a regular part of this congregation's church life. I said they were accusing me of a mask. And then apparently in verse 6, they were accusing them of being in it for praise. We weren't looking for praise from men, either from you or from others. I mean, we all know that that kills credibility. People who are flattering, they're setting me up to help themselves. People who are manipulative and they got a mask for greed, they're using me so they can get for themselves. And people who are hungry for applause, you ever been around people like that? They need me. They need me because I'm building their self-esteem and their ego, and the praise they get from me is kind of a sense of building their self-esteem. And Paul, intriguingly, doesn't directly answer back. I think you can read it in verse 6. Just read the verse. We were not looking for praise from men, neither from you or from anyone else. If he wasn't looking for praise from men, where was he looking for praise from? Obviously God. And he wants these people in an unsaid way to recognize, I am God-focused. My life is concerned about God. Rather than being concerned about being self-centered so I can use people by flattery or by trickery or by applause so they serve my self-esteem needs and my selfish desires, I want you to understand that I live my life before God. I'm seeking to please Him. Praise doesn't inflate me because I know praise may not reflect what God has to say. And criticism doesn't devastate me because it's only the evaluation of God that ultimately matters in my life. And not only that, I am living out my life in service to people. In verses 7 to 12, and we'll look at this next week, is one of the great statements about how to have an investing ministry in people. Paul says, you know when I came among you, I was like a mother. I was gentle. I wasn't throwing my weight around and using you. I was nursing you. I was a servant. I wasn't out with a mask for greed. I worked night and day so I didn't have to be a burden to you. I didn't ask for any money from you whatsoever. You got not one, gave not one red cent to me. And I was like a father. I was pouring into your life, imploring you to become a person of God. Paul is telling us that credible people are givers and not takers. They are servants and not users. They are committed to servanthood rather than building their own kingdom and doing their own thing. There's a desperate need for credible people. People who are islands of certainty in an ocean of uncertainty. Your children need you to be that. In a society that breeds cynicism, can they look at their mother and father across the table and say, I may not always agree with them and I may not like what they say, they're credible. They keep their promises. They live their convictions. They are courageous. They are congruent. And they're servanthood. They're not in it for what they can get. They're in it for what they can give. When you walk into a management meeting, and they are talking about people for a particular position, and when your name comes up, you're the kind of person that they say, well, you know, he may not be the most competent person in the world. She may not be the most gifted person that we have. But you know what? That person's got character a continent wide and an ocean deep. They're not a birdbath. There is depth there. That person, I believe in them. I believe in her. I trust her. I'd stake my character or my reputation on him. Is that you? Does your name come up with that? Or does the flag go off? Wait a minute. Paul's life oozed credibility. And they could throw mud at Paul, but the credibility oozed through. It oozed through in the courage of his convictions, the congruence of his character, and his commitment to servanthood. May that be true of you. Oh God, may it be true of me. Let's pray. Father, you who are absolutely credible, upon whom we have staked our eternal destiny, you who have not only spoken your word, but whose Son had the courage to carry it out to the point of dying on the cross for us, whose life was utterly congruent, who could look at his enemies and say, which of you convicts me of sin? And has, as a servant, laid down his life for us. Make us credible. I pray that we might recognize that credibility ultimately comes from knowing you, the credible God, and living before you. For the good of those we live with. Father, make us credible. Make us credible before our kids. Make us credible before our spouses. In the marketplace, when dog eats dog and promises have no lasting value, make us people who are credible. In our friendships, in our church life. For the good of those who need us to be an island of certainty. And for the glory of our God, make us credible, we ask, Father. In Christ's name.